Howdy, boy, howdy. Welcome to Friday, the 14th of December, 2018. I'm Derek Hunter. This is the Daily Caller podcast. Welcome to it, and let's get to it. It's going to be a little different show today because we do a video component of this show that is normally about a half an hour, and that'll be the last half an hour of the program. But I promised everybody that I'd start doing an hour show, so I'm not going to let myself off easy. Plus, there's just a ton of news that happened that I wouldn't be able to comment on if we just went with the straight interview, which is a really good discussion with Sagar and Jetty, the White House correspondent for the Daily Caller. You're going to want to stick around for the whole thing. Or you can skip to just the video by going to thedailycaller.com and finding it there. But there's too much going on. I thought, man, I could just take it easy. But no, I can't. Promises have been made, and it was an extraordinary news day. And there were a lot of things this week we couldn't get to. So let's get to them, shall we? By the way, you can always email the show, Derek@dailycaller.com, DEREK@dailycaller.com. Maybe you'll say, dude, it's Friday. I only want a half-hour show. Tough. Today you're going to get more than that. I want to talk about James Comey and Michael Flynn. General Flynn is scheduled to be sentenced on Tuesday for lying to the FBI. It's a process crime. Michael Flynn committed no crimes until the FBI started investigating whether or not he committed crimes. This reminds me of the story yesterday about the new incoming attorney general of the state of New York, who told NBC News quite casually, yeah, we're going to investigate everything related to Donald Trump, because Donald Trump lived in New York. His business is based in New York. They're going to crawl through all of his associates and see if anybody has broken any crime, that or broken any law. That is not how criminal investigations are supposed to take place. It is not how our justice system is supposed to work, but if you're not a liberal in good standing, the justice system that applies to them doesn't apply to everybody else. Hillary Clinton, given every benefit of the doubt in light of the fact that even Stevie Wonder could see that she had broken the law, hey, there's classified material where classified material isn't supposed to be. Pretty open and shut case, because the law says you can't have classified material where classified material shouldn't be. Pretty straightforward. But James Comey said, no reasonable prosecutor would go after her for that. Besides, she's going to be our next overlord, and so we're going to try and hold my job and look past that. She gets off scot-free. She's interviewed by the FBI for 2 hours, and has 9 lawyers present, including Cheryl Mills, who is also a witness in the case, who was granted immunity. They gave out immunity like it was candy on Halloween, and the guy was trying to cause diabetic comas throughout the neighborhood in the Clinton case. But when it comes to General Flynn, a man who'd spent more than 30 years of his life honorably serving this country, those rules didn't apply. They had heard, to hear James Comey tell it, and I'm not going to play you the audio of this part, to hear James Comey tell it, the reason the FBI wanted to talk to General Flynn was because they'd heard Vice President-elect, because they weren't in the White House yet, Vice President-elect Pence say something about Russian discussions about sanctions that the FBI, Comey says, knew not to be true. And they knew this not to be true, according to Comey, because they had tapped the phones of Sergei Kislyak, the ambassador of Russia to the United States, and had listened to General Flynn talking to him during the transition period. They had brought up, Kislyak had brought up the sanctions that the Obama administration had placed on Russia. What was said, we don't know. It was highly unusual for this information to be so widely disseminated because Flynn is an American citizen, obviously, and there are very strict rules, or there were very strict rules, about who could unmask names of American citizens on international wiretaps. Our Constitution is supposed to protect us from our government. But at the end of the Obama administration, after Donald Trump won, very curiously, President Obama changed those rules so that more, many, many more people could request unmasking of American citizens on foreign national wiretaps. People like Samantha Power, who was the ambassador to the United Nations, for which there is zero reason she should be able to unmask anybody. She's ambassador to the UN. It's a largely symbolic position. The UN doesn't do all that much that's legally binding. It's ridiculous that she would have this power, but she did, and she exercised it a lot. And so did a lot of people in the Obama administration who had no business unmasking Americans and who didn't have that power before the Trump administration was becoming a reality. That helps advance the setup of the Trump administration. Now, in the course of this watching the vice president, Comey says that he said things that they knew not to be true. So they wanted to talk to General Flynn about this, which is weird because, let's face it, politicians lie all the time. They shade the truth all the time. They're constantly polishing a situation, constantly polishing information to make themselves look better, or they don't necessarily want to show their hand to the public constantly. There is a lot that our government does that does require some degree of secrecy. You can't have 100% transparency. But somehow James Comey's radar goes off, his antenna go up when the vice president says something about Russian sanctions that is allegedly, we don't know this to be true, we only have James Comey's word to go on, and that really hasn't proven to be all that trustworthy. But he says something that contradicts what James Comey believes he heard or read in a transcript of Mike Flynn talking to Kislyak. Well, that's kind of irrelevant. The incoming National Security Advisor can speak to foreign officials because you want to be able to hit the ground running when January 20th comes around. That's perfectly normal. What's abnormal in this situation is that the prior administration would be spying on those people and allowing dozens of employees of that previous administration to figure out who it was, to reveal who it was. Highly unusual, probably illegal, will never be prosecuted because Barack Obama is a liberal in good standing. So that's where we get to when we start this audio, because James Comey was asked, the FBI agents came over to the White House and had a conversation with Mike Flynn. What they didn't do was tell Mike Flynn why they wanted to talk to him. What they didn't do was tell him that they were investigating anything remotely involving him. In fact, the day before in the Washington Post, perhaps like a good dog putting out propaganda, ran a story that said that the FBI looked into Flynn's contacts with the Russians and had cleared him of any and all wrongdoing. That was the January 23rd story in the Washington Post. So on January 24th, when the FBI says we want to come over, Mike Flynn doesn't feel like he has anything to hide, doesn't know what they want, wasn't real curious about it. You think, well, I'm a national security advisor. Of course the FBI wants to talk to me. So yeah, come on over, guys. We'll sit down and we'll talk. It was a setup. He was advised specifically by a name that'll be all too familiar with you, Peter Strzok, that he doesn't need a lawyer. Don't worry, don't get a lawyer. Now, allegedly at this point, and by the actions of the FBI, the evidence points to this, General Michael Flynn was the target of a newly launched FBI criminal investigation. Yet the FBI expressly told him this was not true. They didn't tell him this. They did not advise him, you know, when a drug-dealing scumbag or somebody who shoots somebody on the street is arrested, they're immediately Mirandized. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. Attorney, all of that. Everybody's seen that a million times if you've ever watched 10 seconds of Law and Order. They deliberately avoided that and misled Mike Flynn into thinking this had nothing to do with anything. They just wanted to come over and talk to him. Which is incredibly unethical, which is something that James Comey would never have done to previous administrations. And how can I say that? Because he says it. Let's listen to this bit. It's four cuts here. The first cut is Nicole Wallace of MSNBC, because, you know, James Comey is a nonpartisan hack, asking him how they ended up in the Situation Room. And he just says, I send him. And the crowd laughs. Now, this is a New York City crowd. But imagine they're laughing at the deliberate targeting and misleading and lying to a man who served this country with distinction. And they ruined his life. General Flynn had to sell his house to pay his lawyers. On top of everything else, losing all the money that he had, pretty much. His life, financially, has been ruined because of James Comey and because of the Obama administration and the lies that they told and the unmasking and the targeting of this man, all because he committed the only absolute unforgivable sin that leftists have. Yeah, they don't like that when you don't agree with them, that's a sin too. But the mortal sin to Democrats, at least at this moment, because their morality is always fluid. Now, that's not a Bill Clinton reference, but their morality is always fluid. He committed the one mortal sin to the left, and that is he worked for Donald Trump. Listen to this setup.
You look at this White House now, and it's hard to imagine two FBI agents ending up in the sit room. How did that happen?
I sent them. Something I probably wouldn't have done or maybe gotten away with in a more organized investigation, a more organized administration, in the George W. Bush administration, for example, or the Obama administration.
See, he let the cat out of the bag right there, but then he quickly corrected himself. It's something I wouldn't have done in a previous administration. But I mean, I probably couldn't have done or wouldn't have gotten away with. Yeah, no, crap, I just said I wouldn't have done it. You know, equal application of the law and all of that. If the FBI director likes you, then they probably wouldn't try to set up your incoming national security advisor. Yeah, Jim, we get that. The audience laughing. They are New York liberals. I mean, you have to be at the 92nd Street Y to hear James Comey be interviewed by an MSNBC host. I don't know what tickets cost, but I can't imagine. Nothing in New York is free except the dirt that miraculously gets under your fingernails in a sea of concrete. Where that dirt comes from, I don't know. But so somebody paid a pretty penny, a crowd paid a pretty penny to sit down and listen to James Comey talk about how he set up Mike Flynn. And he probably wouldn't have done it to another administration, but God, he hated Donald Trump. See, James Comey and Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and all the rest of the gang that we all know well, they hated Donald Trump because, A, in the cases of Page and Strzok, they were hardcore liberals who couldn't even stand that the guy was existing. To James Comey, he claims he was a Republican. I haven't seen any evidence of that. He's been campaigning for Democrats and calling for the election of Democrats across the board. So I'm not really sure what kind of a Republican that is who goes, you know what, I firmly believe in all of these things, but screw him. Get this guy I hate. He clearly hated the president from the get-go, and he also had a career plan that involved Hillary Clinton being president, which is why I suspect he so eagerly cleared Hillary in the investigation and violated all manner of protocol in the Justice Department and ended up ultimately getting him fired over it. Hillary most likely would not have fired him over it. She would have been eternally grateful, which I suspect is why he did it, because she was going to be president up until the point that the American people had their say. To hear him go, well, yeah, I probably wouldn't have done it in another. He wouldn't have done it in the Clinton administration. He knows that this was highly unusual. He knows what he did, and he's very careful in his word choice. We'll get to all of this, what I mean, in a bit after we hear James Comey set it up and congratulate himself for taking down a three-star general. The conversation continues.
The protocol, two men that all of us have perhaps increased appreciation for over the last 2 years. And in both of those administrations, there was process. And so if the FBI wanted to send agents, into the White House itself to interview a senior official, you would work through the White House counsel, and there'd be discussions and approvals and who would be there. And I thought, it's early enough, let's just send a couple guys over.
Again, the crowd cheers. Hey, it's early enough, maybe we can catch these guys, expecting, you know, an incoming administration, it wouldn't be beyond the pale to think that, hey, you know what, some FBI agents want to come over, they want to let me know what's going on, and they give the old, we're going to work together, we're very much looking for anything you need, let us know kind of thing, here's what we're up to, just so you know, you're the National Security Advisor. And James Comey took full advantage of that. They lied to General Flynn by omission, which is just every bit as a lie. If you don't believe a lie of omission is a lie, try it on your significant other. Leave something out, very important, some crucial detail on something, and then when you're caught, because you'll always be caught, say, well, I didn't lie to you, I didn't tell you the opposite, I just implied the hell out of it, hoping you would take that inference and go with it. I'm pretty sure you'd be sleeping on the couch at night, or they would, depending on who has hand in that relationship. But it's disgusting to hear the crowd laughing. Going, yeah, you ruined a guy. There is no crime that Mike Flynn is charged with aside from lying to FBI agents. No crime. He did not break any laws. He didn't violate the Logan Act, which is a 218-year-old law that no human being has ever been charged with. That was the guise under which this unmasking was done by the Obama administration. Oh, Mike Flynn might have violated the Logan Act, which says that private citizens can't negotiate on behalf of the government with foreign entities, with foreign governments, which as incoming national security advisor, he wasn't. And I guarantee you, whoever Barack Obama's first national security advisor was at the beginning of his administration was talking to all kinds of foreign officials during the transition, because that's what happens. You want to be ready to go on day one. This isn't, you know, on-the-job training. But Comey is sitting here congratulating himself for weaponizing that and weaponizing the early days of an administration and taking advantage of it and lying to a three-star general. James Comey's national service consists of being the FBI director. James Comey was not an FBI agent. He didn't work his way up through the FBI. He didn't pay his dues. He was a political appointee right to the top. But he took out a three-star general, and he's super-duper proud of himself. But he wouldn't have done this to a Bush administration or an Obama administration. He just thought he saw an opening to go and get somebody. Because remember, they wanted scalps. They still want scalps. Part of the reason why this has all been very calculated. Part of the reason that why on January 3rd or whenever it was before the before Donald Trump was even sworn in, when he was just president-elect, that James Comey briefed Donald Trump on the bogus Steele dossier was so that CNN would have a, quote, news hook. This is documented in FBI emails. They had the dossier for a long time. Tons of news outlets had it. It had been circulating around Washington. John McCain dispatched a staffer to the UK to get a copy and was trying to push it on reporters who said, we can't prove any of this crap, or there's no proof of any of this crap, or there's contrary evidence about this crap. And they were still pushing it. So there was no real news hook other than this Hillary Clinton paid for document came into existence. That's not news. That's not important. It's campaign opposition research without anything to back it up. And so surprisingly, plus they all thought that Donald Trump would lose, no media outlet ran with it. Now that he was president-elect, they desperately wanted to report it. But again, they couldn't because there was no news hook for it. There was no proof of anything. They had sent reporters scouring the globe to try and get proof of this stuff, and they couldn't do it. So James Comey, knowing that CNN needed a news hook, then briefs the president about this bogus document that nobody had taken seriously. But James Comey thought that Donald Trump just needed to know. Donald Trump didn't need to know. No one needed to know. That's like your friend cornering you and saying, look, there's in the bathroom, there's some really bad stuff written about you. Hurtful, hate-filled stuff. Oh, really? Well, okay. No, but I'm going to tell you what it is because I think you need to know. You don't need to know. Wipe it off. Cover it up. Whatever. You don't need to know. Most of the things that are told under the guise of, I just thought you needed to know, are things you didn't need to know. Nobody needs to know these things. Except CNN needed the president to know, so there would be a news hook. And within a week of James Comey briefing Donald Trump on this document, then he talks to Jim Clapper, who goes to Harry Reid. This is all very well documented. And tells him this has been done. And then Harry Reid leaks this information that it's go time. And he starts talking about this dossier. And suddenly CNN reports on it. BuzzFeed ran the whole thing, saying we can't prove any of this stuff, but here it is anyway. You know, as any good journalistic outfit would do. We can't prove any of this stuff, but here it is anyway. We heard a rumor that so-and-so is sleeping with such-and-such. May have no idea. Can't prove it. Can't disprove it. But here you go. Consume it, people, and make up your own minds. Well, you can't really make up your own mind when something is presented as fact that can't be verified, but it's presented as fact, as the dossier was. You're perverting the mind. You're not informing the mind. So Comey has a bit of a jagged history for somebody who claims to be above the political fray. He sure acted in a political manner a lot. So this conversation continues. Here's a little bit more of James Comey and Nicole Wallace.
And so we placed a call to Flynn, said, hey, we're sending a couple guys over. Hope you'll talk to them. He said, sure. Nobody else was there. They interviewed him in a conference room at the White House Situation Room, and he lied to them. And that's what he's now pled guilty to.
And he lied to them. He lied to them. You can see it. We're just, hey, man, we're going to send some guys out. We're going to have some beers and some chips. Sit down, shoot the breeze. Mike Flynn, after he talked to these FBI agents who told him he didn't need a lawyer. Don't get a lawyer. You don't need a lawyer. Then we're not doing it. We're just coming over to shoot the breeze. After the discussion, he gave them a tour of the White House. Which certainly would not, if you're set up, if you are given the impression after being misled, like, hey, we just want to come over and shoot the breeze, and then you walk away going, that felt an awful lot like an interrogation. Like, what in the hell are you guys up to? If you got that impression, you're not going to go, you guys lied to me. What the hell is going on? But anyway, you want to go take a tour of the White House. You're not going to do that. Michael Flynn did that. Which lets you know the tone and tenor of the discussion they had at the time. We're still not entirely sure what Mike Flynn said, but we're just told that he lied because he's pleading guilty to lying, except for the fact that he was fighting it until they said, and we're going to go after your son, and we're going to go after your son's business, and we're going to ruin his life. And he had already had to sell his house and had gone nearly bankrupt defending himself. So yeah, eventually there comes a point when you're up against the government with unlimited resources and unlimited time and apparently no scruples that you're probably going to go, all right, give me something to plead to. I can't keep defending I can't afford to defend myself against this monster. Well, now comes this story because, you know, that's what he's pled guilty to. He lied. Now comes the story, this is from Fox News. Judge in Flynn case orders Mueller to turn over interview docs after bombshell claim of FBI pressure. And you think, what in the hell? If they walked away, the way James Comey tells the story is those agents walked away from the White House thinking that Mike Flynn had just lied to them. He had just straight up lied to their faces, trying to cover up what we don't know. And what he was covering up, by the way, was not a crime. He's not been charged with any other crime except for allegedly lying in this this interview. Well, under normal protocol, when the FBI goes and speaks to somebody, they then do an after-action report. It's called a 302 form. Which, if you know any police officers or if you're a police officer, when they arrest somebody, at the end of their shift, they have to sort of write a report of what happened on their shift. take copious notes. If they arrested somebody or something went down, they have to make sure to document it as much as possible. And they do that not eventually, like, hey, you know, 6 months later, sitting down trying to figure out what happened on the night of January 16th. That's not the way the world works, because that would be inadmissible in court as testimony. If you know, I didn't think about it for 6 months, and then I sat down, I saw, oh crap, this court date's coming up. I better try and write down what happened that night, because memories fade. Well, the 302 report for the discussion with Mike Flynn was not filed until August. Until August. This discussion took place in January. That is 7 months later, almost. How refreshed do you think the memories of the FBI agents who went and conducted this interview were 7 months later? By the way, one of those agents, again, was Peter Strzok, who is a well-documented hatred of Donald Trump and was eventually fired from the FBI. But isn't this interesting that it took 7 months to get this? I'm not sure if the judge in the Flynn case knew this. The judge is named Emmett Sullivan, and he has ordered Mueller to turn over all of these documents because, you know, there's a good possibility, not to get all conspiratorial here, but there's a good possibility that there were other 302 forms that were filed much earlier that reflected what we've heard in testimony up on Capitol Hill, that the agents at the time did not believe that General Flynn had misled them, had lied to them. So what happened in those ensuing 7 months? A lot happened in those ensuing 7 months. Here is just a quick summary of the timeline here. Flynn is interviewed. There's a preparation of a memo noting the conclusion that Flynn did not lie. Then Comey gets fired. Then Mueller gets appointed. Rosenstein now issues a new directive to Mueller, which we haven't seen. Mueller was originally appointed to investigate Russian interference in the election. That was it. Now suddenly there was a second directive, which we haven't seen. Why haven't we seen it? Because the Justice Department refuses to turn it over. I don't know why the president doesn't order it released. You can speculate about that. But in the name of transparency, I would like to see that released. Then Peter Strzok gets fired. Then suddenly there is the 302 form. This is filed, claiming that Flynn lied. See any disjointing there? All of this happens, and then at the end of it, it spits out that Flynn lied. In an interview, they'd already said he didn't lie, or the agents didn't feel like he lied. Well, who thought that he lied? And what did they base that on? And why did it take 7 months to put together this memo that should have been written much, much earlier, like that day or the next day? We don't know, but the judge overseeing this case wants to know. And there's an interesting little tidbit about Judge Sullivan. He was the one who just blasted the Justice Department in the case of Ted Stevens. Now, Ted Stevens was a senator from Alaska. I knew Ted Stevens a little bit. He was good friends with my former boss, the late Senator Conrad Burns from Montana. And during the campaign, he came out to Montana, and I had a chance to drive Senator Stevens around. He's the one who famously talked about it. The internet is a series of tubes. But he was a very smart guy, and he actually knew tech quite well. And if you know how the internet works and bandwidth and all that, the series of tubes things does kind of work. But neither here nor there. The government railroaded him. The Justice Department went after him for allegedly taking a kickback in the form of upgrades to his home. Big criminal investigation. He was convicted and he lost his reelection bid in 2006. Then he died in a plane crash a few years later, but his appeal went on, and it was discovered that the Justice Department had withheld exculpatory evidence and had pressured the contractor to lie about Senator Stevens. The case was overturned by Judge Sullivan. It was thrown out. It was completely a rebuke of the Justice Department and their actions. Sadly, Ted Stevens didn't live long enough to see that. The voters of Alaska did not get this before the election, and they probably would have reelected Ted Stevens had he not been convicted. And it was just a complete railroad job. So Judge Sullivan is very skeptical, or at least has a history of skepticism when it comes to government abusing its power, when it comes to investigators doing shady things. Now, it's weird and last minute, but I think that thanks to this interview in part with James Comey and other news stories surrounding this, thanks to conservative media, Judge Sullivan is becoming aware of these, shall we say, irregularities in the Flynn case. So even though the Mueller team is seeking no jail time for Judge Flynn, it's still not going to sit right with him, with the judge. Possibly. This is wild speculation, but it seems well-grounded if you know the details of this case. And you sit there and you say, why wasn't this report filed for 7 months? There's something not right there. Why did the agents think at the time that Flynn didn't lie to them? And then when they finally get around to filing this needed paperwork, that tune had changed after circumstances had significantly changed at the FBI. So it's going to be interesting to see what Judge Sullivan ends up doing next week when it comes to the sentencing of Flynn. Nobody expects Flynn to get any jail time, but there is a possibility that Sullivan could just toss out this agreement and toss out the charges because of the abuse of power and the violation of protocol, procedures, and frankly, the rights of General Flynn. That would be very interesting to see. That would be popping of the liberal balloon that you've seen getting inflated and inflated for the past 2 or 3 weeks as the sentencing of Flynn got closer and closer. They're ready to say that Flynn is lying on behalf of Trump, and therefore Trump needs to be impeached. Donald Trump didn't once flush a urinal, and he needs to be impeached. They're ready for impeachment on anything. And there's a possibility, I'm not saying a certainty, but there's at least a possibility that that could change dramatically if Judge Sullivan, if we have a fuller picture now, and Judge Sullivan looks at this picture and deems what the FBI did and what Robert Mueller did to be so beyond the pale so as to be an abuse of power. I, for one, am looking forward to Tuesday because I want to know what happens. We'll talk about that on Wednesday's show. All right, we are up to a little past the half an hour point of this show. After, we'll stop here, and then the music will start again, and it'll be like a whole second show where I talk with Sagar and Jetty about the goings-on at the White House, the mood at the White House. He's at the White House all the time. He knows all these players, and he got a phone call not that long ago saying, hey, can you be here in 45 minutes to sit down in the Oval Office with the president for half an hour? That's kind of how it happens. You get some real insights into how this administration works and how the White House press corps works. Yeah, as always, you can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com, with compliments and complaints. If any facts I got wrong here, which is a possibility, you can correct me there. And otherwise, you can enter to win the Brian Kilmeade book still till about, I'm going to say 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. I'm supposed to sit down with Brian Kilmeade at 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. So if you get your entry in by 2, I'll get you in the fishbowl. Otherwise, enjoy this interview with Sagar and Jetty. All right. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Daily Caller podcast, the Friday video edition. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the show. Don't forget to subscribe, share, tell a friend. And by the way, until about 2 o'clock today, I'm going to put it till 2 o'clock today, you can still enter to win the signed Brian Kilmeade books by emailing moi, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. If you tell me you subscribed on iTunes and turned a couple of friends onto the show, I might give you an extra entry. I won't, but I'll appreciate it. But still, please do all of that, and whatever the hell else they want you to subscribe to that they flash on the screen, click subscribe to. We bring somebody into our world every Friday to let you know what's going on in theirs, and today is no different. We're joined by Senior Chief Legal White House Correspondent Sagar Jetty. Sagar, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
What is your official title? Is it just White House?
It's whatever I want it to be. Okay, it's, so right now it's White House Correspondent.
I think
we'll
it should be Senior Chief
tomorrow.
Bureau Legal. Yeah, everything.
I'll probably be
it.
Chief Washington Correspondent by tomorrow, and then I'll go back to White House Correspondent by next week.
Just make sure you get it on the business card.
There we go.
And make a big collection. Okay, so every day you are representing the Daily Caller down at the White House, which means you're rubbing shoulders with the likes of Jim Acosta. I'm going to have to scrub that later. But this week in particular is why I wanted to have you on, because it has been a hell of a week for every year, every week is a week for news out of the White House. But this week has been a very tumultuous week compared to most, with the plea deals with Michael Cohen, the announcements from the special counsel's office, Southern District of New York. Before we get into any of the specifics, what has the mood been among White House staff? Have you noticed a difference between this week and other weeks?
Well, I think among White House staff, what I have seen is that they really have become inoculated to these types of things. I mean, we got to remember, as maybe it seems extraordinary, they go through some sort of news cycle where suppose, you know, the liberal commentators
this
on
is
TV,
it.
This is it, it's over, it's the smoking gun, you know, this time. And so at a certain point, if after 2 years of hearing over and over and over again that this is it, they just don't really care anymore. Yes, they understand that it's an annoying news cycle. It means that they won't be able to push the agenda that they wanted to push that week. But in terms of, oh my gosh, like, they've really got it now, it's not like that at all.
That you wouldn't say that there's palpable concern.
No, I mean, the president's angry. He's
that's
generally
what we hear all
angry.
The time. Is sources tell us that CNN did this whole thing not that long ago. He's super pissed.
Right.
How would they?
So here's
I
the
just
fool,
want your
here's
impression the, of that because you're inside the
right,
room.
Here's the foolish thing about this is that they'll be like, the president said to be angry, and then in reference to the Cohen matter. Mm. Well, yes, he probably is angry in reference to the Cohen matter, but what so many people don't understand is that the president goes through a huge amount of things throughout the day. He has meetings with the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He has meetings with, like, right today's meeting. Right now at the second, he's meeting with governors-elect. Then he'll be meeting with, you know, the CIA. Then he'll get a briefing on select things. I mean, literally works, you know, from the very beginning of the morning all the way till the end at night. People are coming in and out. No matter where he is, even if he's watching television, military aides are coming in and out with papers. So he's probably angry with respect to this one thing, which is what somebody might have talked to them about and then leaked it out. But in terms of his overall demeanor, I was inside the Oval Office the day of that CNN story about the president is said to be furious. Mm. I interviewed him for 35 minutes. He was in a jovial, joking mood. Right?
But he was apparently kicking puppies throughout the West Wing.
And that's the stupid part of all – I mean, these stories are impossible to disprove. They're
that's
completely
the thing about
impossible.
It.
Yeah.
Especially the anonymously sourced mood stories. Mm-hmm. If the president is in a good mood and wasn't in a good mood all day, if it's a completely bogus story, the White House issues a denial and the response is, of course, they're denying.
Right, exactly.
That's what they do. Yeah. It's impossible to prove, but more importantly, a lot like the climate change argument, since they're making 100-year predictions now, it's impossible to disprove.
Yeah, so the thing is with the president, I'm sure he is angry about the Michael Cohen thing. The man watches quite a bit of television. He sees it constantly. He sees claims that are being made.
I imagine he feels betrayed.
He feels betrayed by his former lawyer who is – who had? I mean, we saw it today. He was interviewed by Fox News by Harris Faulkner, and he was visibly upset about the Cohen matter. But he also really was talking animatedly about General Motors and about China. So to care, I mean, can any of us be distilled down to one thing for a whole day?
No.
It just doesn't work that way. Think about how many moods that you go through throughout your life and throughout a single hour, right? And then he's the president of
you
the United States.
You might be bipolar.
Yeah, maybe.
If it's
honestly,
every hour, you might
right.
want to seek some professional help. Now, you as a reporter, you haven't been in this business for 10 or 20 years like many of the people sitting in that room. You
Which
have,
is a benefit.
I know.
Think. Yeah.
I like to ask this question of people that have sort of impressive sounding jobs or have achieved something. I imagine before you got this job, before, you know, getting a White House press pass has to be kind of thrilling. And I bet you called parents, family and friends. I get to go to the White House every day.
Yeah.
You had to have an impression of what that would be like, what it would be like being in the press room before you were ever in the press room.
Yeah.
What's the difference between what you thought it would be like and what it's actually like?
It's so much stupider than I ever thought it would be. I wanted, you get your press pass and you think about like whatever TV show, whatever movie that you've seen where you see public officials pressed on the days of the matter. You get in there and you end up seeing 13 to 15 different versions of some question about Michael Cohen or Robert Mueller. And it just turns into this inane back and forth and name calling, So one person stands up, or I think Jim Acosta got up and walked out of the room once.
Jim Acosta, who's that?
And it's these like foolish antics that you never. You go into that job and you really do want.
You think I'm going to be rubbing shoulders with some serious people.
And you are, but you end up rubbing shoulders with them about the dumbest things. You end up talking about the president's mood, or you end up combating stories about this, or pushing stories that about how the president, or about Melania's jacket.
How many scoops of ice cream he gets, whether or not he has a button that brings him Diet Coke.
And so it's the idiocy of that, which has been disappointing, but then there's also the moments of history which really do live up to that. If anything, the idiocy makes the really extraordinary moments stand out.
What would you say is the moment that you're going to tell your kids about that's happened so far?
So far, I mean, absolutely. A couple of weeks ago, whenever I was just sitting at my desk and I got a phone call from the White House and they said, "Can you be here in 45 minutes? The president wants to talk to you guys." I said, "Yeah, I'll be right there."
No, it's no good for me. Yeah. I got a sandwich coming in like 20 minutes.
It was 10 a.m. and 10:15 a.m. She said, "Can you be here at 11 o'clock?" And 11 a.m., I'm standing inside the Oval Office interviewing the President of the United States. That one is in the history books for me.
What would you say is the biggest misconception about the president, the person, mm-hmm. not his job performance, but the man himself, between the way he is portrayed mm-hmm. in most media outlets and the way he is when you interact with him?
He is both completely in control and out of control. And so the way I would put that is like the most controlled id. Like he speaks off the cuff and will give you he'll give you exactly what he's thinking, but he also is extremely cognizant of which issues he can do that with and which he can't. And if you ever interacted with him in one of these longer periods, on and off the record, he knows exactly what he's saying. When he says something, he is completely cognizant of exactly how it'll be portrayed on a CNN Chiron or something else. He just doesn't care. And that's, I think, one of the common misconceptions is there's no way he knows what he's saying.
Not this flying by the seat of their pants and figuring things out as they go.
Well, it is and it isn't. So it's not that he doesn't fight back and shoot from the hip and all that, but he does very, very much consider what he's saying and I think one of the best examples I've ever seen of this is during the Stormy Daniels situation. He did not speak about that for 3 months. Mm-hmm. I mean, and think about that with this, oh my gosh, Trump tweet incoming is what a lot of the blue checks. No. Whenever he sees something which he might be vulnerable, I'm not saying he is on this particular matter, or whenever it's very sensitive to foreign affairs, I've always seen him immediately say, no, we're not going to talk about that.
Have you ever seen the president caught flat-footed?
Not really, honestly. I think he's generally had a pretty good response. I think before my time, Charlottesville might have been the only time that he got flat-footed. But he's pretty cognizant of what he did there.
Do you think he has any regrets?
No, I really don't. I think the man is 100% secure in everything that he's probably ever done, and especially in the White House. He'll say, maybe I could have done this better and all that, but generally, he's... The self-confidence that the man has in him, it's awestruck. You're like, wow, this guy believes it.
The self-confidence, which I think is pretty evident to anybody who pays attention to the guy, he peacocks around quite a bit and always has. That's what he's been known for. This week has been a particularly, I would imagine, trying week for, if not the president, some of the people around him. Have you noticed a difference at all? Not just in general, because this is there's always been impeachment talk. There's always been the Maxine Waters of the world running around saying impeachment, 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 like it's Tourette syndrome. This week has been more serious. I think bogus, because I don't think that anything that they're describing is impeachment. They won the argument in the 1990s about Bill Clinton and your sex life. You can do whatever you want, and now they're trying to lose that very same argument. But that doesn't mean that somebody who's acutely aware of the coverage that he gets, even though he watches Fox most of the time, I think he has other TVs on the other networks. So you've seen no change whatsoever?
I don't see anything. I think the man relishes the fight. I think he would enjoy, he would both be angry about the fight, but he would enjoy it and thrive in it in the best possible way. These types of things are exactly how he became president of the United States. They are really, I mean, they're straight out of the playbook, because a lot of these more establishment figures are just not willing to fight the same way.
Right.
And they're not particularly good at it.
No.
Whenever they try.
They're not good at messaging.
Right.
You got a message of liberty and they can't message that, for God's sake.
I'm struck that they're so quickly going towards impeachment, especially on something like a campaign finance violation, because I don't think they're going to fare very well if they get down in the trenches.
No, because Michael Cohen pled guilty to something doesn't mean he would have been convicted of it.
And that's what the president said today.
The more serious charges, he was going to do some serious time in. And I bet that the prosecutors at the Southern District of New York said, you also have to plead to this one if you want this deal, because it could be used as a political weapon to beat the president about the head and neck.
Right. And those charges haven't been tested in a court of law.
No.
I mean, just because you plead guilty to something doesn't mean it would necessarily hold up before a jury. That's basically what the president said today. He's like, look, they had him stone cold on tax fraud,
mm-hmm.
and said, if you say these embarrassing things about the president, then sure, you know, we'll give you a reduced sentence. So
let me ask you about your colleagues, and I don't want you to name any names unless you want to, just because I know that it would create an awkward work environment for you. But when the camera's on versus when the camera's off, there has to be a world of difference between the way many of these people are.
Yeah, I mean, people are cordial. It shouldn't be acknowledged that they're not. But there is a real, I mean, there is a real sense of antagonism towards the president. And I don't even know if it's because they dislike him on a personal level. That might be true in some cases. It really is just the hunger to break the news. I think that it's just such a hyper-competitive environment. There's over 100 of us who are in there. That there's this
it's a very
kind of,
small room.
It's not only that.
You don't even have a seat in the press room.
No, I stand on the side, on the left. And, you know, when we get out there for when the president's departing in his helicopter, it's a zero-sum game of whether you stand in front or I stand in
it's
front.
It's just whoever's
so
there
just
and you get up there and jostle
it's
for position.
It's a jostling around, and then you're competing for the attention of this man. And, you know, people notice if you're the one who gets the president to be able to spout off on something, that is very good for you and very good for your job. So it's – I don't think that – I think that the environment in there is probably something that's always been intrinsic. It's when the whole world is watching, you just get even more pressure from your bosses to produce.
Well,
more.
You – I don't yeah. – were you there when Sean Spicer was still press
no,
secretary?
No, I wasn't.
And I'm just curious if there was a difference between when he turned off the cameras at the press briefing and when the cameras are on.
Well, even then, I think everybody was paying so much attention to that audio and to the grandstanding of being like, why don't we turn the cameras on? Why don't we turn the cameras on? That it's still just – there's always going to be a level of performance whenever it comes to these things, especially in the Trump area, because everybody is watching it. I mean, this is the biggest story on earth. I see foreign correspondents who roll into the White House briefing room whenever some foreign leaders are in town. And it's like awestruck. They can't believe that they're – like the journalists themselves are celebrities. The White House staffers are these people that you see that play on TV 24/7 in their countries. And so it's just – it's hard for us to actually comprehend in America because this is what we live every day. This story is the whole world story. And you're right there in this tiny room, which you've been in.
Yeah.
Right? It's dirty.
Yes,
it's gross.
It's very small. It used to be a swimming pool, I think.
Yeah, it literally is built above an old swimming pool. It's built for maybe 25, 30 people to work in. And you probably have 200 who are cramming themselves in there every day.
Any real divas in there?
Yeah, sure.
Name
There's
names.
Divas.
Name names.
Yeah.
John Gizzy.
No way.
I'm just kidding.
John Gizzy is a class act. The classiest act there is.
John Gizzy's been there forever. I just bring him up because he's got a very verbose question whenever he gets called.
He does,
up.
But I like it. I like his style. He asks very good, deep questions.
So going forward, there's a lot of mistrust, at least portrayed in the media, among the president and his staff. The first lady has talked about this, that she believes there are people on the staff. She won't name names, nor should she, but she says that she's talked to the president about this, that she doesn't believe have the president's best interest at heart. And we've seen a lot of turnover in the White House. We're losing a chief of staff at some point in the near future. Does that impact the way the president goes about his business? Do you sense that there are people being frozen out or sort of pigeonholed that okay, we don't really trust this person. Keep an eye on him.
Yes. So I think the real issue for Trump was he's not used to having this massive apparatus that works around him. And the Trump Organization, he worked with maybe like 10 to 15 very close aides. Actually, that's probably a bigger number. It's more like 10 of people that he worked with closely. Now he has at his disposal quite literally hundreds, each of whom actually has an extremely important function because the government is so massive.
Right.
And so the thing is for Trump is he won. He picked his RNC chair, Reince Priebus, to be his chief of staff. And he said, okay, Reince, you staff out of the White House. You guys are the ones who've been doing this forever, so do it for me. That caused a lot of problems in the very beginning because there was no real planning with the transition and with Reince because nobody expected Trump to win.
Right.
That you have quite a bit of people who work for Trump who don't like him.
Who don't like
much,
him.
And who don't believe in anything that he says. Who spend much of their time talking to the press about how much he sucks. But it's worth a lot of money in this town to be the director of public liaison or something.
Do you think if you're walking around the White House, I imagine, you have a little bit of room to move in the West Wing, not absolute free reign,
sure,
but you have some room to move.
About 30 feet.
And you can talk to staffers. Do you get a sense that you're being watched when you're talking, just like talking to a staffer? Do you think that the press is – that the White House is – watching you guys to see, try and figure out who's sending you stuff, who's telling CNN Donald Trump is super pissed.
They all know who's giving stuff to CNN or who's giving stuff to us. It's at the very, very highest levels. We're talking about 6-7 people. These are the most senior staff of the White House.
I'm talking about the negative things.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of.
You really
of that
think
comes
that someone in the president's inner circle is still sort of trying to kneecap him?
Absolutely. Maybe not necessarily kneecap him. Maybe kneecap somebody else. And sometimes the president comes at the expense of that. There are fiefdoms within the White House. There are also constituencies, and there's hundreds of millions of dollars in future payroll that's at stake. Each one of these people is a brand that has to be managed very carefully. That's the way they look at it.
When the New York Times op-ed by Anonymous, whoever this person was, and it could be anywhere in the bureaucracy, they just said senior official, which could mean the deputy undersecretary of something or other whose office is in Colorado, for all we know.
Right.
Was there a change in the White House, even temporarily? Did they really want to scramble to find who this person was?
I think the president did. I think the rest of the senior staff realized it's futile because as they kept trying to tell the president, there's 3,000 people who qualify as senior administration official. I mean, every U.S. ambassador, every whatever assistant secretary of state is technically a senior administration official. It's a meaningless term. And so there was just a sense of, oh, well, this is just another case of another person who we probably shouldn't have let in, who got in the first place, and we should just move on.
With General Kelly leaving soon as chief of staff and the field is wide open, what names are you hearing? I've heard everything from David Bossy to Corey Lewandowski to Newt Gingrich, which I think Newt Gingrich would be great to have as an advisor, but not necessarily chief of staff. He needs his own staff. I know Newt a little bit. He needs his own staff to sort of keep him in line. But is there a dark horse out there?
I wouldn't say there's a dark horse. I think David Bossy has a pretty good shot. And I know that the president is also looking at Ambassador Lighthizer. Mark Meadows was being considered for a time, but the president said that he wants to keep him in Congress. Actually, right as we were speaking, the president told the press that he's got 5 final candidates that he's looking at and that he's interviewing them. I am not going to be surprised at all if David Bossy's on that list. He's somebody's name I've been hearing a lot.
Why do you think Bossy? Just because you've been hearing his name? He has a good relationship with the president?
He has a great relationship with the president.
It goes back quite a few years.
He has a good relationship with many of the original Trump people on his staff, who the president likes and respects quite a bit, the people who go back with him all the way to 2015, 2016. And David Bossy, remember, he was a lawyer. He ran Citizens United.
Right. And before that, he was the chief counsel for the the investigative arm of the House.
And what is the president about to go right up against? He's about to go right up against an investigatory House committee of full of Democrats who are going to subpoena. It's going to be a very, very political time. And so a lot of the president's advisors that I've talked to say that it makes sense for somebody like Bossy, who has real political experience, knows the way that these subpoenas and things are going to work in order to craft the defense for the building.
Would President Trump listen to a David Bossy as chief of staff?
As much as he listens to anybody. I mean, nobody.
Which is about, on a scale of 1 to 10.
Maybe 10%, 20%. I mean, that's probably about how much he listened to John Kelly. That's probably about how much he listens to everybody who gives him advice. A lot of it is just a formulation of conversations with dozens and dozens and dozens of people, and that's how he makes up his mind.
John Kelly, was he on the outs for a while? The problem with the media is I've heard for a year and a half that Donald Trump is going to fire Robert Mueller. And then if it ever happens, then they go, aha, see, we've been telling you this.
Right.
With John Kelly, he's been rumored to leave several times in the past, and he hasn't left. Did it come to a crescendo, or do you think it ran its course?
Both. I think that it both ran its course. The president got tired of Kelly. I mean, General Kelly very much viewed the job in terms of management of the president, which is, sure, we're not going to tell him what to do, but we have to manage the day-to-day, you know, things around him. That chafes Trump a little bit. But to say that, you know, I saw reports on the day that he was, you know, supposedly going to be fired that he was told, like, he hadn't spoken in days. And that's just not true, right? I mean, they spoke on several of occasions. I think what the president really was looking for is, you know, after the chaos of the Reince-Priebus era in the first 6 months, General Kelly pretty much came in and did what he had to do. Now there's a little bit more of an orderly process, and Trump is much more used to being president, so he wants to look forward to a more political chief of staff, because we are really entering a new era, going into re-election and growing into a democratically controlled House.
Do you think Donald Trump enjoys being president? What I mean by that is not the trappings of being president. Everybody would love to just shoot through traffic, have a Air Force One at their disposal, be saluted, all the pomp and circumstance that goes with it. I'm talking about the day-to-day work. Do you think he enjoys the work of being president?
I have asked myself that a lot, and I don't know, but he does thrive in it. But I don't know if that's different from liking it. But he thrives.
The difference is from his past life, and I've done roofing, I've done concrete work, and there's something strangely satisfying about that kind of work. I still drive through Detroit where I grew up and say, you know, I put the roof on that building, or I put the roof on that house. There's something satisfying to be able to look back at the end of the day and see something you've actually built. He built massive buildings. It's different doing a podcast or doing writing where you look back and you don't see anything. You don't know if it actually has an impact. I imagine that is part of his psyche, is at the end of the day, he can feel like he's getting something good or moving in a good direction, but there is no tangible way to measure
He likes to look at the economy. He likes to look at, you know, the new USMCA. Those types of things, I think that's what he relishes more than anything. The man can talk about trade and about tariffs and all those things until everybody else is blue in the face. That he just – there's nothing he loves more than talking about economic issues. I think he does love that part of the job. I know he loves the trappings of being president. I don't think any person couldn't. Yeah.
Nobody goes, God, it's I really amazing. Hate having yeah. really good food prepared right. for me when I want it. This is the worst thing ever. Right. Talk a little bit about – the way that the president sort of runs the – you haven't worked in other White Houses, but the access to the president. Mm-hmm. I remember during the Obama administration, you just watch – he'd have one or two press conferences a year. It was a printed list of the reporters that he was going to call in and in which order. They knew that it was coming. They likely knew what the topic was going to be, if not the wording of the question. No follow-ups, an incredibly long 7-minute answer to a yes or no question, and they get through 7 questions in an hour and then move on. It's completely different. I hear still Jim Acosta, I keep bringing him up mostly because he's the most vocal, complaining about we don't get enough access, there's not enough press briefings, even though they happen when they're needed, I think. But you have access to the president. You don't necessarily – it seems like you have a lot of access to the president.
More
so than you need press briefings. Yeah. You could ask Sarah Huckabee Sanders or you could just ask the president as he walks to the helicopter.
That's her case, which is we don't need a press briefing because there's a press briefing anytime the president is in front of the press. He'll take his whatever questions that he wants to take. He'll give you what he wants. It is an absolute unprecedented level of access that the press has to this president. No other president has come even close in numbers of minutes interacting with the media. And not only that, he also gives interviews pretty much every day.
Well, you got a phone call.
So we got our phone call.
45 minutes.
And then there were interviews for the next week. And then I guess he turned it off for a couple of days. And now we're back to, I think we've had an interview with the president every day this week so far.
The access. Yeah. I think you're right. There is absolutely an unprecedented amount of access to the president. Do you think that serves him well, though?
Yes.
Much access?
I actually do. So everyone – there's this common thought amongst people around Trump, which is that they want to try and manage him and not keep him from saying what he thinks often. It serves him extremely well because What is he actually good at? He's really good at controlling the media cycle. He knows exactly. It serves him extremely well to go out and say whatever he wants. Dominating
it. I don't know that he's good at controlling it because
he does control.
You have most of the major outlets not conveying the message that he wants, just a message about him. So he's the dominant force.
But I think that serves him well. It serves him even better whenever they cover the story incorrectly in his views, because a lot of A, he can criticize them. Mm-hmm. B, that shows to a lot of his supporters that even whenever he tries and tries and tries to get his message out there, that he won't get a fair shake.
Do you think the relationship between the president and the press is going to get any better? This week it was announced that the White House, the president himself, has canceled. Every year there is a big Christmas soiree for the media at the White House. New York flocks down here from their bubble to this bubble to go and do a grip and grin photo with the president. It's gotten so big that there have been two nights in a row, a TV party and then a print party. Those are canceled this year. Is that out of spite? What do you think? What do you make of that?
I mean, things got very accurate. Again, a few outlets ruined it last year by saying that they would boycott the Christmas party, and they turned it into a spectacle. And so the White House is like, why do we have to spend thousands of dollars on a party for the press if they're going to turn this into a thing in order to cudgel us with? We're not going to be playing that game.
Yeah. Well, surely the press was just as critical of Barack Obama and all the parties that he had with the celebrities down there. Sagar, last question for you, and I appreciate you coming on. As you look back on your time in the White House so far, and we're not saying goodbye to Sagar, he's not leaving, but what do you think people need to know about what it's like inside this White House, either to do your job or about the administration? You see the coverage. What are people not being told or not being told enough or missing that you think is important for them to know?
People are being told that this is so ridiculous and so chaotic all the time that they are missing completely the massive changes to the economy, to our foreign policy, to environmental regulations. And the
regulations
White House,
in general.
Yeah, regulations in general. The whole fabric of our society is really controlled by the government. And, you can have – you can have thoughts about that if you want, but having it under a Republican president and having conservative CMS directors or EPA director or a Surgeon General, I mean, there are all these different things that are happening around the entire country, which they have completely lost sight of. And so it almost benefits you if you're somebody who believes in a lot of conservative action and conservative cause to have the press so hyper-focused on the mood of the president, because nobody's scrutinizing things that used to be major scandals in this. Look at ANWR, the Alaska tax. I mean, that was a fight of the century, not even a decade ago.
25 years.
Here they tacked it on to a tax reform bill, and nobody talks about it but Donald Trump. I mean, this is a major change to the U.S. economy. So it's things like that the people should know that, yes, there's all of the drama that you see on TV is happening, but there's also a lot of work that's being done behind the scenes.
Sagar Njeti, the deputy senior legal deputy White House correspondent for the Daily Caller, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to you guys for listening and watching or whatever. Don't forget to subscribe, spread the word, tell a friend, and enter to win the signed Brian Kilmeade books. Whatever you want to do, send me email compliments and complaints too. I accept them all. Thanks for watching or listening, and we'll be back here on Monday with a new episode of the Daily Caller podcast.